You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
This is Marcus Johnson, joined by Chris Johnson.
What's up?
And we're about to cover comprehensive Bucks happenings. It's here, district time.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
The Bucks, man. I had to stop and just reflect for a moment because of how well this team has played defensively.
Right.
You know, since the All-Star break.
Right.
Number one in the entire NBA.
Jeez.
You know, in defensive rating since the All-Star break. You know, and again, sample size is small, and the competition. Minnesota, Philadelphia, without Embiid, you know, Charlotte a couple of times. I mean, competition right out of the break wasn't the greatest. A very feisty Bulls team with Nikola Vucevic, who I used to love at USC, but after what he pulled against AJ Green, I'm
boo.
the love is not quite as intense as it was.
But four opponents in a row.
Yeah.
You hold them under 100 points. Yeah. Now in the NBA, today's day and age. Talk about that, man. That's incredible. I don't care who they're playing.
That's tough to do. And there were teams in that grouping, you know, you could talk all you want about the Sixers without Embiid, but they've played competitive basketball against certain teams. They've beaten some good teams without him. Tyrese Maxey is a guy that is a budding, not a wannabe superstar, but he's a budding budding young superstar that can light up a scoreboard. So, and then at the point of attack, I'm seeing Dame get 5-6 deflections in the course of a basketball game. I'm seeing Dame using those boxing skills. Yeah, Dame's always like, you know,
he's a big boxer.
Yeah,
he's a big boxer.
He's a boxing guy. He's always especially with Vin Baker. But I think he can maybe cut Vin with like a two piece one time or something. Because Vin, every time he sees it, Vin's like, I'm good, bro.
Dave be like, not the I'm good, bro.
David come up on him like this, and David like, I'm good, bro. But I tell you, it was funny. I was watching Dame once and a few days ago, and he came at Joe Prunty.
And what Joe Prunty do?
Joe Prunty squared him up.
He doesn't look like
Prunty,
he plays.
Joe Prunty squared him up and gave him like a little, you know, little.
He's standing on business. Joe Prunty looks like he stands on business, bro.
He came, no retreat, came forward. You know, Dave was like, okay. But I digress. But those quick hands.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's getting steals. He's ripping ball handlers.
Yes, he is.
He's poking the basketball away so teammates can pick up the loose change. And it's just a beautiful thing to see. And then Malik Beasley, we all often talk about him and how well he shoots the ball. But what he is doing at the point of attack, and it all hinges upon the rejiggering, for lack of a better term, of the whole defensive approach.
Yeah.
By Doc Rivers, his staff, you know, Rex Kalamian has come in and just infused a level of physical basketball play even on switches.
So it's physicality.
They're switching everything, and Clark Kellogg made up that word, so I hate to like give Clark physicality.
That's not a real word.
Well, allegedly.
Why are you off of Clark?
I'm on Clark.
I love Clark. Clark's our guy.
Clark is my guy.
But why physicality though?
But the physicality. Oh, see, here I go, because I want to give Clark. I created point four, so I get mad when people say point four. So I would, you know. Without giving due credit, but Clark Kellogg, physicality at the point of attack between Dame and Malik Beasley has really improved. And the point I was making, Rex Kalamian, he's bought in this mindset of being physical on switches.
Yes.
So whenever there's a switch,
yes,
instead of allowing your man to slip or roll quickly to the basket,
we're holding.
These guys are holding.
We're impeding progress, bro.
They're getting underneath.
Yes.
Getting underneath the man they switch on to and just keeping him from rolling or doing anything that he wants to do. And not only that, but just bumping and pounding. And so it reminds me, and again, this is not to say it replaces, but it just reminds me of how physical Jrue Holiday was with the Bucks at the point of attack and how effective. And let's get back to the boxing analogy. So it becomes like body blows, right? body blow.
Body blow, body blow.
Body blow, body blow, body blow. And then all of a sudden, you're not setting screens as willingly as an offensive player. You're not setting screens as aggressively because you know when you set a screen, you're going to get hit. You're going to feel some, it's not pain, but it's just uncomfortable. And you know, as a basketball player, when you consistently
living in the levels of uncomfortability,
have to live in the levels of uncomfortability on every single possession.
It tests you mentally.
Let's be real. And it tamps down your aggressiveness.
So this is the current day NBA version of hand checking, of physical play, of the 80s style basketball, 90s stuff that they wanted. This, within the rules, we're not going overboard. We're not clotheslining people, but we're getting under things on screens. We're impeding progress on switches. We're bumping. We're talking, we're doing everything within the rules.
Tagging hard.
Are the Bucks the most physical team in the NBA right now as we speak, or if you watch this stuff, MJ? So are they the most physical team in the NBA?
Yes.
Damn.
Yes.
You owning that? The Bucks are the most physical team in the NBA.
I'm playing the tape in my mind. I got Miami kind of flooding in. I got Minnesota.
Oh yeah.
How they could play with Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards at his size, 6'4", 230.
Nas Reed.
With his Illmatic
style.
Illmatic Nas. the way he brings it. But I'd be hard pressed. I'm just running down some of these top defensive teams in my mind's eye and how they play, and here's the point too, Doc Rivers. What he has said, and this is what I love about Doc Rivers. He's been around 24 years, so you say what you want about Doc Rivers, but he's seen everything that you can see as a basketball coach. He's forgotten more basketball than any of us will ever know. A lot of us will ever know.
Absolutely.
Let me put it that way.
Absolutely.
And so what he has done is embrace the whole concept that we don't have the foot speed to play defense a certain way.
Yes.
But we've got length and we've got physical basketball players. And that's what we're going to use to our advantage. And so they've crafted a defense to use those attributes to the Bucks' advantage. And it's been a beautiful thing to watch because they grind you out. They mentally wear you down. And then all of a sudden you get just to that point of submission where you start to lose your rhythm, lose your timing, miss shots that you were making early on.
Yeah.
And then I see the Bucks go on these 15-2 runs or these runs where they can create some separation. And it all starts with the defense.
MJ, but with the Bucks having, a really tough schedule coming up this month.
Yeah.
Right. Road swing.
Yeah.
It's a gauntlet.
Right.
How do they sustain this level of defensive intensity and effort? How do you sustain it with minutes, with Doc managing minutes and rotations? Yeah. You can't, are you going to go through the whole swing plan? Guys, 38 minutes a game, you got to work people back in. How does Doc manage this roster to maximize this effort defensively? How you keep guys playing hard?
Well, it's not like, the guys are tired of playing like this. This is new.
Yeah.
This is fresh.
That's a good point.
This hasn't materialized since the All-Star. This is a whole new experience for these guys.
You can still see the vigor, the excitement about this defensive side, the enthusiasm defensively.
And you see the results.
Yeah.
You're number one in defensive rating.
Holy crap.
Since the All-Star, you're number one. The Bucks were like number 20 in defensive rating, and this is a team that is consistently.
Is it addicting, M, when you guys get locked in like that on the pro on the NBA level, when you're locking dudes up? Does it become an addictive thing?
I've said this before. I played on great scoring Milwaukee Buck basketball teams when I first got in the league, and then Hubie Brown and the Knicks, I believe it was, started to put an emphasis on holding teams under 100 points at 92, 93. And so our great assistant coach out of the Boston Celtics system, John Killalay, he kind of redefined our whole defensive approach, pace-wise and everything else, and made us a defensive team, a possession-by-possession team. It becomes the chess match. It becomes now, you don't have that ability to kind of mess around with possessions, and you can piss off possessions here and there. Now you've got to play your
premium
best basketball.
Premium on possessions.
Every optimal possessional intensity every single time down the floor. And it just puts so much pressure because you don't have that margin for error. That was a term I was looking for. Those terms, they're fleeting sometimes. But you don't have that margin of error offensively because now every possession you've got to do something. So the fact that this team hasn't played this way until since the All-Star break. They started out when Doc first took over 3-7, struggling, trying to figure things out. But now you can see that they are starting to embrace, understand, and recognize just how effective this type of defense can be. And it's just a wonderful thing to experience, and it's a wonderful thing to look at.
Last thing on this point, Em, I've heard a lot of people in the media talking about just how the Bucks have turned it up after the All-Star break or pushed that button as a veteran team. I wanted to get an understanding. So when you played in the league, was there a different style of basketball that you played pre-All-Star break? And is there a different style of basketball that you played post-All-Star break? Because I'm hearing, like, you know, people have this perception that the Bucks just turned it on.
Well, here's the deal. You try and find this level of – this elite level of consistency that you can now plug in game to game and be on automatic pilot somewhat. The Boston Celtics have done that this year.
Ooh.
They've come out, you know, and they found this level of elite type of consistency at both ends of the floor. You know, number one in defense, number two in offense, or vice versa. I mean, what they have done has just been remarkable, but that's what you strive for. And so it's not about flipping the switch at a certain time, but it's just you're heading toward this pinnacle in terms of what you want to be in terms of your identity as a basketball team.
Yeah.
And so the Bucks have yet to find it completely, but they're on the path. It's they haven't gotten to grandma's house yet, but they can smell the peach pie on the windowsill. You know,
the peach pie.
Yeah, the peach pie and the peach cobbler on the windowsill.
What about chitlins? Yeah, well, that's gonna stink.
You
but
can smell the chitlins way further away than that. That may make you turn around. I'm sorry, but I digress. But no, you know what I mean. They haven't arrived at grandma's house, but you can see you're getting close.
Right.
You're getting close. Right. So now that becomes that carrot dangler in front of you, that impetus to keep going, play harder. The results are there. You're winning basketball games in different types of ways, and you're starting to establish an identity of who you are as a basketball team. And it starts first with defense. And let me say this about another thing that people have talked about. Not a lot, but it's been mentioned. The Bucks' pace, it's down just a little bit.
Yeah.
Their pace is down, 98 possessions per 48 minutes. I think it was like over 100 before, right around 100.
That's a good thing.
What type of pace is played in playoff games?
The slow pace, the execution pace.
You're not running up and down the floor, you know, transition basketball, one possession. It's a slow down pace where you've got to execute at both ends of the floor.
Facts.
Possession by possession. So this actually plays into this whole deal about how good this team can be. And then that tough schedule. I remember your freshman year at UCLA. The year you guys won the national championship, 1995, Ed O'Bannon, the great leader. But there was a gauntlet that you guys had to face, and it was like Stanford, Cal, Arizona State, Duke.
Oh, shoot.
You know, USC. It was like a spate of about six tough ball games, and three of those six or seven teams were ranked in the top 20.
Yeah.
And then I think you finished up with Oregon State and Louisville or something like that. But my point is that I remember going into that stretch, I said to myself, okay, this is going to be the make-or-break moment of the season for this basketball team, and how well they're able to handle this stretch of the season will tell me if they have a chance to win a national championship.
Yeah.
And the Bruins that year in 95 didn't lose a single game, like 8 or 9 in a row from that point on.
Right.
Not saying that the Bucks, because it's a tough schedule, but if these next 10 games, West Coast trip, if they can go 7-3, 8-2 or whatever, it's going to really bode well in terms of what they can do heading into the postseason. So it comes at the right time. It comes at the perfect time for me.
You think the vets, like, I mean, Giannis, Dame, are going to play a ton minutes throughout, or do you this next swing West Coast road trip, or do you think this is going to be an opportunity for Doc to get extended minutes for AJ, Gallo, Pat Bev, who's been kind of balling? Like, I'm really just interested in that part of it.
The minutes distribution,
because as well as the Bucks have been playing, right, I feel like look, they're going hard. The effort that they're putting out and shoot-arounds, practices, and games. I'm like, how long are they going to be able to sustain this? Is this something they're just going to sustain throughout the rest of the season, MJ? Or is Doc going to start playing other guys, start trying to steal minutes with other dudes so he can save some legs?
Well, again, to my point, I mean, you're the 20th-ranked defense. Were you you were 20th-ranked defense. You were 30th in transition defense. Were you really expending all that?
MJ keeping it 100.
I mean, have you really exhausted every ounce?
So you're saying dudes aren't even tired?
Basketball.
You're saying dudes are fresh.
Have a whole lot left.
So that's not even a thing right now.
Well, I mean,
because they do a good job of managing minutes anyway.
Well, you got to be concerned. Another point. I mean, before the Bucks won the championship in 2021, I think there was an idea that you wanted to keep them fresh for the playoffs. And Coach Budenholzer, I think, had Giannis down to around 30 minutes a game. They were blowing people out.
I remember that.
31 minutes a game. And my thing is, like, when you get to the playoffs, you're going to have to play 37, 38. And if you're just used to playing 30, 31, it's going to be
that wind.
This disparity in wind.
The lungs. The wind.
MJ, I'm getting choked up. But I'm getting tired thinking about it.
Hold on.
But I don't think it's too much to ask for these guys to play. You try and keep it around, I think, 33 to 35 minutes for Giannis and Dame. You know, some games they'll play more, obviously, 40-minute game here and there. If you want to win it another time, you may be able to hold them to 28, 32. But average it out to about a good 33 to 34, 35 minutes, and they'll be okay. And then when the playoffs get here and the rotations get cut just a bit, they'll be able to play at the optimum level for 37, 38 minutes and not have an issue with it. So I don't have a problem. And you want to keep this thing rolling. You want to keep this good feeling of winning basketball and dominating and playing well against good teams, which this next stretch is going to, you know, sorely test all of that. But you want to win as many of these games as possible. And so from that angle, I expect Doc Rivers to do whatever it's going to take for this team to be successful, especially over these next 10 games in the month of March.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm looking for is more just of this new defense going against bigs that don't allow Brook to just drop and cover.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see, you know, what the defense looks like against bigs that are stretching you out and making you have to come out.
Right.
Right on things. The other thing I wanted, I when we're talking about, you know, just the Bucks in this stretch, who, as far as like Beasley's concerned,
yeah,
he has been, to me, I won't say the Bucks, you know, there's MVP, there's most outstanding, and then there's like these other awards that, you know, you can give a guy. He needs some type of award as far as a value at on both ends of the floor, because he's a flow guy on swing passes. He's a flow guy on driving kicks. He's also obviously on the shots and the jumpers. I mean, he looked amazing in Charlotte in that game, just playing that flow. It seems like when Beasley is in his bag, it's almost like the Bucks can't lose.
So we'll give him the most value add.
Yeah.
Most value added award.
NBA.
You know, the NBA. Because you're right, and again, I admire what he's doing defensively. He's really embraced the role of just being this aggressive, and I liken it to Lester Hayes and Jack Tatum of the Oakland Raiders,
cornerbacks
at the line of scrimmage, just beating the crap out of just wide receivers to the point where they didn't want to run their routes. And that's what Bees is doing. Dame is doing a much better job of recently. But then you throw in Beasley's ability to knock down that corner three, that break line three-pointer. He's shown a terrific ability to hit that floater. You know, he worked with a former Pac-10 Player of the Year, Jerome Randall.
Wow.
So Jerome,
he worked with Randall?
Randall's his guy.
I did not know that.
Jerome has worked him all summer. I think he's even flown out to Milwaukee a couple of times. Jerome has. I'm not even sure if he may have been out here recently, because when Bees was struggling just a bit to just, you know.
Tighten him up,
give him that confidence, just show up. So, but you can see that the fruition of all that work that he put in with Jerome Randall. And to have the kind of offensive season, the efficiency that he's shooting that three-point shot with, and still be able to be such an effective defensive player, as you mentioned, that's because we didn't know. Grayson Allen's gone.
Yeah, that was a big loss.
You know, Drew's gone. All these guys at the point of attack defensively are not there. So now Beasley, and remember, the knock on him was that he's a great shooter, great scorer, but he's not known as a defensive player.
Wow.
And for him to come in and
he's turned it around,
and
man.
Transform that reputation like he has this season, I think has been nothing short of remarkable.
He's absolutely turned it around.
Coming up next, Eric Name from The Athletic.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
All right, the very first guest on Here District, you know, Chris and I, we talked about all the different big name national people that we wanted to have, and I said no. I said hell no. We got to get the guy, my go-to guy.
Absolutely.
when I want to enhance my broadcast with some really inside type of information at both ends, but this young man writes for The Athletic, Eric Name. Eric, welcome to Here District, man. Thanks for being on.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, first thing I got to know: what kind of basketball did you play in your background? If you played,
sure.
Not that it's important. I'm just curious.
I played D3 ball, a little D2 ball in college, and did that for a little while, and then didn't see eye to eye with a coach. So then I decided to start doing the media stuff. So here I am.
What kind of game did you have?
What
was the name?
I want to know.
What was the name game?
I played point guard. Okay. Like to move the ball around a little bit, shoot a little bit, try to get everybody involved.
And you were kind of the coach on the floor?
Is that I tried to be. That's probably why I didn't get along with the coach so well.
You and the coach weren't on the same page. You had your idea what would be successful. Yeah, it's all good. Let's talk about another pretty good point guard, Dame Lillard, and just what you're seeing in terms of he and Giannis, the synergy, how they're working out together. I know it was a little rocky at first, but what have you seen lately between these two?
I mean, I think for me the big thing is just kind of getting Dame in the spots that he likes to be. One thing that I was talking with Dame about the other day at Shootaround is, like, Doc has made some pretty simple changes, right? Like, for the most part, under Griff, if you watch the Bucks, Damian Lillard was going to be moving from left to right. He's going to bring the ball up on the left side of the floor, and he was going to move to the right side.
Yeah.
That's not how he's played most of his career. Most of his career in Portland, he brought the ball up on the right side of the floor and came to his left. And, you know, I was talking to Dame, and I was like, oh, was that like a conversation you had with Doc? Like, hey, I'd feel more comfortable. And he was like, no, Doc, just like he coached against me a bunch. He knew that I like to have the ball on the right side and come across the left side of the floor. So, like, that simple change, right? That doesn't seem like a lot. It has made Dame a lot more comfortable. You talk about other changes that Doc has made. All of the screens that are getting set for him are probably about 3 to 5 feet higher. Just on the floor. Rather than Brooke's heels being on the three-point line, Brooke is out and above the three-point line. And one thing that we've heard Doc Rivers talk about is just how much more comfortable he feels in those drag screens that start a lot of transition possessions. When Dame brings the ball up the floor, the bigs come up the floor, set him a ball screen right in the middle of the floor to get him moving and try to mess with the defense right away as soon as that possession starts. And again, you're just seeing it. These aren't crazy changes, right? Like, I'm not talking about a brand new offense or anything like that. I'm just talking about putting Dame in the spots that he likes to be on the floor and he's more comfortable in. And I think you've seen after the All-Star break, all of those things. And Dame still shot 4 of 18 on Friday in Chicago. It wasn't like a perfect game, but I just think overall you're seeing him more comfortable. And then as far as the relationship with Giannis and kind of how that's working, one thing that Giannis had told me in the one-on-one I did with him at The Athletic over the All-Star break was, like, I know that Dame likes the ball early in transition. If I can throw that kick ahead pass, let him get it in transition, he can shoot the pull-up three, he can get downhill, he can get us going offensively. And not only is it something that can get the team going, it's something that can get Dame going. And that's one thing that I think when you're looking about this team down the stretch, how good they're going to be, it really comes down to how good can Dame be. Because Giannis is Giannis, right? He's 30, 11, and 6 every night. He is the metronome. He is going to just be the dude that he is every single night. That's what he does. But you got to get the other guy. The reason why you brought Damian Lillard in was to be that guy, and the Bucks are still trying to find that guy and get him to be that guy in Milwaukee.
And my thing with Giannis, was that around Thanksgiving, I made the comment that he can fix his own plate. You ain't got to worry about trying to set him up, get him off. He's going to find a way to get his 30, get his 15 rebounds, get his 6 assists. That he's evolved to that level of a player where he's got that plugged in to his DNA right now as a basketball player. So you don't have to worry about him.
And Eric, I was going to say, the big thing with him is no matter what, he's going to find a way. That's Giannis, period. It doesn't. He's seen every coverage at this point. He's been defended every single way. He knows how to get those numbers that you're talking about, and he will always get them. And then if they're not doing the job defensively, he's going to get 10 or 15 more points. Yeah. He's going to get 5 or 10 more. Like, he's just going to keep adding to all of that. But that 30 and 11 and a 6, that's every night. Period. It will be there.
Make a way. He will make a way out of nowhere.
To Eric, did you get a sense of just Giannis's mentality and how he and Dame would handle like late game situations for the Bucks, you know, big possessions, you need a bucket. Did you get a sense of his mindset in regards to that?
It's pretty simple, man. Like, I, as we were talking, Giannis tried to keep, you know, let me know, like, I've said this and I'm going to keep saying it. And Dame's the guy. We are going to give him the ball at the end of the game. Period. The ball is going to be in his hands. And that's not to say that doesn't mean Giannis gets the ball in the pick and roll, right? Like, that doesn't mean Dame doesn't throw him the ball. That doesn't mean Dame doesn't throw him a lob. That doesn't mean he doesn't get involved somehow. But at the start of the possession, Damian Lillard is going to have the ball in his hands. And Giannis is like, I know that people are sick of me saying this. I'm sure they don't even believe me, right? But right. This is right. What we're going to do. And if you've watched this team this season, he ain't lying. The ball's in Damian Lillard's hands. And that isn't to say, absolutely, like, sometimes in transition he might not attack or he might not see an opening. Whatever it might be, he might go outside of the play. But yeah, that's what MVP players do. If they see an opening, they take advantage of it. But overwhelmingly, this is Damian's he's driving the car. The keys are in his hands. He gets to turn it on, and he gets to start every possession. And that's what it's going to be. And to Giannis, you know, I ended my one-on-one with him over the All-Star break with the sentence that matters most, because it's Giannis talking about, this is Dame. I ride or die with this dude until the blank and end. This is my guy. But he has to believe it too. And I think that's the part where we've seen the struggle, is that it's pretty easy to say these things. It's pretty easy to feel these things. But if you're Damian Lillard and you're the guy coming from outside of town, it ain't your Adidas logo on the hallways in Fiserv Forum. Right. It's Giannis's Nike logo. And, you know, they ain't going to make a Damian Lillard statue at the end of your career here in Milwaukee. They're going to make a Giannis statue. Like, it is his franchise. So even if Giannis feels this way, I think they still got to get to a spot where Dame really truly believes, like, all right, I'm Portland Dame Lillard here in Milwaukee. That's what they brought me here to do.
And it's, I don't know if I'm overhyping it or not, but I really thought the All-Star game, three-point shooting contest, the way he won that, missed the first four balls in that last rack and knocked down the money ball. He even mentioned that on one of the racks, he shot and the rack hit his arm as he released it, so it was like an and one, you know, and so that kind of rattled him just momentarily before he got to that last rack. But I thought that, and then the MVP winning that award, again, it's the All-Star game. I mean, we could go on for hours about the defense being played, but the fact that he walked away with those two honors, I think, was the perfect timing heading into this home stretch part of the season.
Well, to that point, I thought, and it's the quote that led my article from All-Star Weekend. You know, Dame was sitting with us at, you know, the media availability everybody has to do, where you get all the stupid questions and, you know, there's just a throng of people just around you and you're just like, oh, all right. But when he got a question from me, I'd asked, you know, what does it mean to be here with Giannis? And the thing that he said is that it isn't, you know, just a chance for us to be here with each other, right? Like, when you're there with a teammate, yeah, you might know these other dudes, but, like, it's you and him, and you just get to sit there with each other. You get to have these conversations. There's nothing else to do because there's going to be a whole bunch of media obligations you got to fill. Like, you just got to hang out with that dude. So, one, that's going to help. But two, the thing that Dame said that really stuck with me is that it's not just an opportunity for Giannis to hang out with me. It's a chance for Giannis to see how everybody else in this room, how everybody else in this room sees me, what they think of me, what they think of what I've done in this league. And again, we're talking about a lot of stuff that might not show up in the pick and roll data. We're talking about a bunch of stuff that might not show up on the scoreboard exactly. We're talking about this intangible stuff that's hard to figure out when you're talking about the interpersonal dynamics of putting two superstars together. But that sentence stuck with me. It, just because Saturday night, who's the star? Damian Lillard. Sunday night, who's the star? Damian Lillard. Who's the one hitting half-court shots? Damian Lillard. And you just get that moment. And again, like you said, MJ, like it might that might not mean a whole lot, right? Like the competition level might not be as high as you want it. But seeing it, that means something, man. Like lifting up that trophy at the end of the night, that means something, man. Like it just does. Whether or not we can quantify it, it means something. Right.
Well, especially at this point in his life, this point in his career, I mean, he talked about the newness of everything, the transition that he's going through, everything that's happening with now. This was the perfect, I thought, the perfect reward for him coming out of All-Star Weekend that would propel him into the second part of the season.
Yeah, he seems like he's locked in.
Yeah,
Eric, I listened to your conversation on your appearance on the Athletic podcast, and it was a great conversation you guys had about Giannis and his MVP chances. I wanted to get your opinion on that. It was something that struck me about the convo, though. It's almost as if those guys that you were talking to, and all, you know, well-regarded, high-level guys as far as writers that have votes, that their minds are kind of made up already. If I'm wrong about that, please let me know. But I just wanted you to shed some light on the MVP process and why Giannis isn't necessarily like the top two guy behind with Shea and Jokic.
I mean, I think it's really hard to... For me personally living this, it's hard for me to figure it out because the things that I've seen from Giannis this season, I am of the personal belief this is his most impressive season to date. You look at what he's averaging, I think it's 31 now, 11-6. Nobody's done that since Oscar Robertson in 1961 when he averaged a triple-double. Again, no one's done that since 1961. And again, I'm not trying to say Giannis is averaging a triple-double. He's got a few more assists he'd have to get to. But 30-11-6, that's crazy. Those numbers are crazy. You look at his rim finishing. He's almost shooting 80% at the rim. And you know what's number one on the scouting report every night? Hey, don't let Giannis get to the rim. Don't let him get to the rim. Make him do anything else. The whole team is trying to do it. Wall it up.
Right.
And you know what he's doing? He's getting to the rim. And the thing that's really impressive to me is that in his first MVP season, roughly 25% of his shots were dunks. And that led to him shooting 78% from the rim. And
jeez,
that's crazy. But, you know, the narrative is, oh, you know, he's not as athletic as he once was. What's going to happen when he can't get to the rim in the same way? Well, you know what's going to happen? He's going to figure out how to finish at the rim. Like, the dunk percentage has come down, but all of a sudden, I was talking to Bobby Portis about this earlier this year, but I still remember it clear as day. We go to San Antonio. The Bucks play like garbage in San Antonio. I'm not trying to excuse that performance. They were terrible that night, but they win. And it's Wemby and Giannis going back and forth. And Giannis does a right-left Euro with a right-hand lay where he backhands it onto the corner of the glass and one over Wemby. Mm-hmm. If Kyrie Irving does that, what do? Right? We make the Instagram cuts. We put the music in the background. It is sweet poetry, right? Like, oh my gosh, how could someone finish like this? It's amazing. 6-1 over the top of 7-3. Our minds would be blown. Yo, this man's 7 feet tall. And he's doing point guard finishes. Like, point guard finishes. That's not power. That is not strength. That is finesse. Mm. That is touch. That is all of that. And to me, that's, like, if you're watching this every night, you're seeing all that. You're seeing the crazy passes every night. Like,
the crazy passes.
He gets a little bit...
crazy.
I mean, somehow he still gets disrespected in that regard, despite him winning a championship. And one of the first things he's telling me at the championship parade is... MFers didn't know I could pass. Like, he's been telling people for a long time, like, I can pass. So, again, that's all just, like, the basketball, right? The basketball alone should put him in the MVP conversation. But where I think it's getting convoluted and where I think people are losing the thread a little bit is that there is this sense, there is this perception that, and I hate saying these words because it's really stupid, but there is some sense that Giannis is a coach killer, right? Quote unquote, like that's what, you know, some superstars might do. Because when you look at, you know, and Tim Bontemps' straw poll at ESPN for MVP isn't like the end all be all, but it has been a good indicator for MVP for a long time. 13 people left Giannis out of the top five of their MVP vote. 13 people. Wow. Top five. Wow. I'm not even saying, I'm not even saying top three.
Top three.
13 people don't have him in their top five. I was one of two people that said he should be MVP in the latest straw poll, right? I was one of two. So only two people out of 100 think this dude should be MVP. And I think it's because of this perception. And I personally don't totally understand where it comes from, because I think if you follow along with our reporting over the years, the idea of getting rid of Mike Budenholzer, that didn't come from Giannis. The Bucks have been thinking about getting rid of Mike Budenholzer for years. You know, the first story we wrote about the possibility of him getting fired is in 2020. That's three full years before he got fired. Is before he won a championship, too. But again, he wins a championship. But that pressure was always there. And when you have the best record in the league, you lose as an eight, you lose to the eight seed. There's just these things happen. Like, there's this idea that it was Giannis that said, Bud's got to go. I mean, if you think about the Bucks in what they've been over the last five seasons, championships are the expectations. That's as simple as it is. That's the expectation. John Horst has made that clear. So you can say, oh, you know, Giannis got Bud fired, whatever. All right. So let's move past Bud, because Giannis didn't get Bud fired. With Griff, there is the perception, we reported at The Athletic, that Giannis had given the nod of approval to Adrian Griffin. All right. So that's his quote-unquote guy, right? This is the guy that he handpicked, which I would argue with saying anything like that, but okay, of the finalists, that's the guy that he liked. Okay. Adrian Griffin didn't end up being a great coach. It just didn't work out for him. And that's not to say he couldn't be a great coach down the road. This season, he was not a good coach for the Milwaukee Bucks. Year in, year out.
This team, yeah.
Throughout
this
squad, year,
this team.
You heard from players again and again about the disorganization on offense. You heard about the defense not being, you know, what they were expecting. You know, they have one defensive scheme until the fourth game of the season. And then in the fifth game, they throw all of it out and decide that Brook Lopez is going to go back to protecting the rim and drop coverage. So, again, like, just think about that. We're not talking about superstars. We're not talking about how anybody feels. If I tell you a coach had a defensive scheme through all of training camp and then four games into the season decided to throw it out, what are you telling me about that coach, right? You're telling me that coach might not have had the best ideas. He didn't totally grasp the team that he was coaching, whatever it might be. And again, you just go through this season. You have the argument in Las Vegas at the in-season tournament. You know, you have Giannis blowing up after they lose to Houston. Like, what are we doing on defense? What are we running? What are we trying to do? Everyone needs to be better. We need to be coached better. I know everyone grabbed onto the equipment manager needs to be better, but the first person that he said needs to be better is the coach. The coach needs to be better.
Yeah.
And again, sure. So you have all of this, but what's impressive to me is that at no point do you look at the way Giannis played and say he wasn't giving his all. He wasn't trying to make it work. He was trying to get that guy fired. That's how coach killer comes about, right? If you're talking about a coach killer, it is somebody dogging it, right? Like, you're just not playing hard. You're not doing it. And we've all seen it, right? We've watched the league for decades. We know what a coach killer looks like. Giannis putting up 30, 11, and 6. That ain't coach killing. That's going out every night and trying to make this work. And the thing that I really found impressive was in the one-on-one I had with them at The Athletic that we ran over the All-Star break, you know, Giannis is talking about, like, yo, I'm doing everything in my power to make it work. I'm on the floor. I'm breaking stuff down for teammates. I'm trying to help make sure the plays get installed right. Like, I'm trying to do all of this stuff more than I've ever done before. He tried to make it work. Until the very end, until the bitter end, he was trying to make it work with Griff. It didn't work out. But for all of that to then be like, well, you know, he got this dude fired. What? Like, what are we talking about? Like, I just don't see it. And to me, that's where all of this comes from. Him not being in the MVP conversation is, one, everyone's a little bit bored with how great he is. And two, there's this perception of the outside stuff that has occurred in Milwaukee over the last 5 or 6 months. And I think that perception does not match up with reality. Certainly none of the reality that I've seen on the court, none of the reality I've seen in the locker room, none of the reality that I've reported on at The Athletic. Like, to me, that perception just does not match reality. And I think that leads to the unfortunate spot that we're in, where I don't know that he's going to be in the MVP conversation this year.
Well, you know me, Eric. I'm always, you know, espousing my whole deal about waiting till after the season to give the MVP. And I know it'll never happen, and I get clowned for saying it. But my point is this, is that we talked after his two MVPs and playoff disappointments, let me put it that way. Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, he was not going to get considered for that third MVP because he didn't win a championship, and which was right on point. But now he's won that championship.
Yeah.
He dropped a 50 piece in the closeout game, and he hit 17 tonight. You know, it would seem like that would be enough just to toss his name into the hat in the top three with 30 and 12 and 6 assists.
Yeah.
1961. No, it would seem like the fact that he's redeemed himself with the championship. I mean, acquitted himself more than maybe anybody in the history of the game with that 50-point performance. Why that would not be enough? But you're saying the coach killer angle is something that's out there, and that's totally unfair. Totally unfair.
I mean, I just think it is. And again, I don't know if people would use those exact words, but I think they would talk about the drama that's been around the team or whatever it may be. And again, like, I don't know that you can blame Giannis for Adrian Griffin not being up to the standard that he needed to be up to. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to say Griff couldn't get another job and be a great coach. He just wasn't the coach for this team.
Right.
And I thought it was pretty clear from, you know, the first month of the season that I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. And things just didn't get better. But during that time, every night Giannis was killing himself to try to make it work. And to me, that's where I come away just so impressed with this season, that he's putting up the numbers that he is, on the efficiency that he is. He's exploring new skills, new passes, new ways to play. And yet he's doing all of this leadership. He's trying to lead this team in ways that he hasn't done before. And I shouldn't say never, but to this extent, he's never had to take on so much. And that to me just leads to me thinking this is the most impressive season of his career.
And this idea about the voters being bored, it kind of reminds me, MJ, of a story you told me back in the day with Michael Jordan and Karl Malone's MVP. You remember that year?
Yeah.
97, but it was like almost like the sense was we were tired of seeing Michael win, right, so let's give one to Karl.
Well, so Eric, FYI, I mean, so I would vote for the MVP and the Rookie of the Year, and Kevin Calabro would take, you know, Most Improved and some other awards or whatever. So this one year, Kevin Calabro's like, well, I'm going to vote for MVP. So I was like, well, dog, what's up? and Kevin was real honest with me. He just said, well, you know, me and a bunch of other voters feel like Michael has won it too much, and it's just time for someone else to win it. And I said, time for someone else to win it? I mean, you vote for the guy who deserves the award.
The Hooper. Who's balling,
bro? But the long story, and Karl Malone had a great year. 28
sure. point,
whatever it was. Yeah. He may have averaged 30 that year. He had a great year, but it was still Michael, in my mind, was far superior. But that was the year that Michael did the double back move in the finals
with
and
the
stole
steal.
The ball from Karl and hit the game winner against Russell, I believe, and that's a few moments later. But it's just interesting how, you know, the voters can control the award. And here's another quick story, Eric, that you'll appreciate. So I'm voting for Rookie of the Year, and I think I voted for, let's say, Elton Brand. I get a call from someone unnamed at the NBA office saying, we want to give out co-rookies of the year this year. Would you mind if we changed your vote to Stevie Francis?
Sheesh.
I was like, hey, you know, do what you got to do. If that's what you guys want to do.
Sheesh.
I mean, it was close. Yeah. It wasn't like there was such a disparity where I felt like, no, I got to stick with.
Right.
I was like, but they wound up giving co-rookies of the year. So my point is that this voting process is
interesting to say the least.
And the other thing I would say is that, you know, I'm covering all 82 for the Bucks, right? That means I'm going to get to see some of the MVP candidates four times, some of them twice, in person at least, right? And that's not to say, you know, I'm not watching ball in my downtime, right? Because that's what I do. Like that's just kind of how I enjoy living life. But there is only so much that you can kind of consume at one time. So it is harder. And then I just think a lot of the times these narratives can just carry the day because it's easier to, you know, oh, you know, somebody said this thing's happening in Milwaukee. Like, all right, I watch a quarter and then you have confirmation bias and you're like, yeah, I saw some of that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I see what everyone's saying. And it's hard to watch this much basketball and be informed on every single thing that guys are doing on a single night. And like I said, I'm not trying to take anything away from Jokic or SGA. They've both been fantastic this season. SGA defensively has been awesome this year. Jokic has been carrying that team when Aaron Gordon wasn't really shooting all that well. Like they both put together great cases, but I just think what Giannis is doing this year in Milwaukee has been really special.
So last thing we're going to touch on, Eric, we got a question about Chris Middleton and when he comes back. Now, I'm just wondering, and this is just me speculating with Marcus's musings just off the top of my head, but do you think there's any chance that Chris coming off the bench could be something that the Bucks may look at? I know he's been a starter for all of his career in Milwaukee, a three-time All-Star. At this stage of the game, I'm just thinking about his, you know, you're giving the edict. You're coming off the bench, but I want you to average 20 a game. I want you to get up, you know, 17 shots in 20 minutes or 22. I want you to be the dominant force for that second unit. The Klay Thompson role. And then as a closer, now, you know, last 5 minutes, you're on the floor with Giannis and Dame and whomever else is out there. But do you think that's something that, to answer one of our fan questions, you think that's something that may be considered? What's your opinion on that?
So I've gotten a similar question a lot, right? Like, believe it or not, most of my conversations in life end up being about the Milwaukee Bucks. So if someone sees me, they ask similar questions. So I've had this conversation. So sure. I think it's interesting. I think when you're looking at Chris, there's a couple things that we've heard, right? Start of the year, Chris was on those minutes restrictions and he would come off the bench. And I thought he did a really nice job being aggressive in those moments. I thought he did a really nice job, you know, if you put it out per 36 in those 20 minutes, he was scoring more, he was assisting more, he took on the role. So that's good, right? That would suggest he may be able to do that. I think the other thing that you heard from Chris is that in those moments, it was hard to find an actual flow with my teammates. Yes, I could score. Yes, I could play make, whatever. If all you're telling me to do is just go score and create, all right, I can do that. But where I think it gets more difficult is then all of a sudden the final 5 minutes come around, like you're talking about, MJ, and it's like, all right, well, since I've been out here, all I've been doing is having the ball in my hands. Now all of a sudden I got to be off the ball and find my flow again here. And that's not to say he couldn't. Chris Middleton will be a second side killer as soon as he gets back. Like, that second side action will be, disastrous for defenses to try to cover because it's going to be real difficult because Chris is so good. But I think you got to think about how does it all work in trying to get the best version of Chris with the best version of Dame and the best version of Giannis and try to figure all that out. And then I think there's a couple other things. Chris has talked about how it can be a little bit harder to get himself all the way warmed up, get himself all the way ready to go, and then sit for 6 minutes and then come in. And that, it's especially with his injury history, I think for a lot of players it's tough, but I think for Chris specifically, with the lower body injuries that he's had, to kind of mess with those minutes a little bit. And that's not to say, you know, Troy Flanagan couldn't figure out a way to make sure that Chris stays warm, right? Like, we're talking about the best in the business at getting people ready to go peak performance. So they might be able to figure that out, but I think you got to figure some of that out. And then I think the toughest part of all of this, and this general idea, is that I think a lot of times when other teams, you look back at the Spurs and Manu Ginobili, right? The Spurs were able to do that because they had dudes that were worthy of 30 minutes in the starting lineup, right? Like, they had dudes that were all right, if we didn't have Manu, this dude could play 35 minutes, and we'd be just fine with that, because that is peak level performance. You know, like Danny Green, Bruce Bowen in the earlier years, all those guys. I don't know that the Bucks have that level of talent this year. And that's not to take anything away from what Jay Crowder is doing. I think Jay Crowder has been fantastic out of the All-Star break. He talks a lot on defense. He's very good. He scored 2 points in the first two games, and he played 50 minutes in those two games out of the All-Star break. And he missed some shots, sure, but there is something to the fact that in the playoffs, you just got to play your dudes. The dude's got to play. And if you're thinking about bringing Chris off the bench and trying to make this all perfect, I think you maybe lose a little bit of the plot in that you're just trying to get your best players on the floor as much as possible. And I don't know how far Chris can go this year, right? I don't know if he's got a 45-minute game five in Brooklyn in him this year. I would doubt that he does. It might look more like 40. Maybe it looks more like 37. And I think that's where people are right to point out how bad the bench looks right now in those minutes. Like, it's just doesn't have that flow. When Giannis and Dame come off the floor, it doesn't have that same flow. And a reason why the offense doesn't look as good is because you don't have Chris Middleton out there. Like, Chris, the bench minutes right now are, all right, Bobby, we got to try to get more out of you offensively because Chris isn't here. That means more post-ups, and we've seen Bobby's efficiency drop. That means more isolations, and we've seen Bobby's efficiency drop. Like, he's taking on a heavier load because Chris isn't there right now. So I think it's a really interesting idea. I don't know, with as top-heavy as this roster is, if the Bucks could actually pull that off in playoff games. And that's not to say they couldn't experiment it with, you know, the final 20 games of the season, right? Like, maybe you can figure some things out. Maybe you can get Chris into the game earlier at, like, the 8-minute mark or something. Like you can do some things.
Yeah.
But
tinkering.
It's tough for me to think that not having him start the game is ultimately good for the team. And that's where it gets a little bit more difficult.
Well, you could manipulate the minutes. I mean, like you mentioned, and you maybe pull him the first 3 minutes into the first quarter, right, put him back in. So now he plays that whole rest of the first quarter with the primarily second unit crew, where he could be the focal point, be the featured guy on offense. So I expect Doc to use every bit of his creativity in doing so. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Well, look, man, this has been great. I could keep you here all day. I know you got some work to do. Bucks are practicing today, and you got to do your thing. But I really appreciate you coming out, being our first guest. And, man, it's been great, man. Appreciate you, Eric.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
You want to take some fan questions, Em?
Let's do it.
All right.
Always open for fan engagement.
Yeah, no, we put out a tweet this morning. We got about several fan questions. First one's going to be coming up on Twitter from user at Noir178210. Will Brooke Lopez be utilized more in the paint, scoring come playoff time? He's proven to be quite dominant there against teams like the Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals, or even the Heat last season.
Nah, he killed both. I remember that well. Noir.
Shout out Noir178210. Great question.
You know, it's interesting because, I haven't looked it up recently, but Brooks' post up frequency, I think when Coach Bud's first year or two was down like around 4 or 5% of his possessions were post up, then all of a sudden I think Coach Budenholzer realized that this is an element of offense that he can bring to the table that we're not utilizing. So the next couple of years he was up double figures, like 12%, 11%. Well, I think 1 year maybe even 17% of his post up frequency. That's how much it went up. So I haven't looked at it this year. But if I'm just kind of eyeballing it, he's probably at, and again, round, don't hold me to this, 7-8%. It's kind of in between, you know, the low numbers that Coach Bud had him posting up the first couple of years, and then the high numbers once he realized what he had. I'd like to see him down in that post more often.
Yeah.
You know, because Brooke is such, now, of course, you know, you gotta be judicious with it because that's Giannis's domain also.
Sure.
But Brooke is such a consistent bucket getter with his back to the basket. He's got great width and size and strength, and he's got such a soft touch and guile, and he's so smooth in terms of figuring out the unconventional releases on his shot. So I think that's a weapon that you may not want to expose early, but you need to get him some reps, obviously, to have him as comfortable as possible heading into the playoffs. But it's always something that you can go to.
Do you think it's more likely for, you know, Doc to be open to inverting those dudes offensively because Giannis has been shooting the ball better this year? Maybe put, you know, maybe before there's hesitation because of Giannis and the way he might have shot the basketball. But since he's been on, boy, 36% yeah. or somewhere crazy, do you think there would be more of a willingness or a comfort level from Doc to throw Brooke down there, invert whatever yeah. offensively? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to tamper with Giannis's strength.
Right.
I mean, and this is what I've always said, because people have posted, you know, Giannis should never shoot another three-pointer again. And my thing is, you got to let Giannis be Giannis. You got to allow Giannis to figure out what and how the approach is going to be for him on a given night offensively. If he feels like taking, now I'm not saying go out there and take 10 threes, but he wants to take 3 threes, 5 threes, whatever, 0 for 5, 2 for, whatever it is he's going to go that night, I have no issues. Because if you allow Giannis to be Giannis, then you've got to take the bad with the good. What's the good? The good is 30 points, 31 points, and 12 rebounds, 6 assists, continual stress on the rim and on the defense and attacking mode and in transition, getting out and scoring more fast break points than anybody in the league, scoring more points in the paint than anybody in the league. You got to let Giannis be Giannis.
Let him do
but
him.
Let me say this. The work that assistant coach Josh Oppenheimer, who was great in the Giannis documentary when Giannis first got here, he was his main workout guy. And Josh had left a couple of years with the Houston, I believe. They brought him back. Now he and Giannis have been reunited. I'm seeing major, major improvement in Giannis's jump shot. Just the confidence. He works on it. He's been working on it extremely
for
hard
years.
Since I've been here. I'm starting to see, I believe, and I've said this before, and it hadn't happened to the point that I had hoped, but I think we're starting to see a psychological breakthrough just in terms of his confidence shooting the basketball, and it couldn't happen that.
Let me ask you about that, because you went through things with your jumper when you played in the league, when you were a Buck. What is that all about as far as the confidence on your jumper? Because as many reps as you guys get up as NBA players, you would think, man, you should be confident about the Jader. Why has it taken Giannis so long to get to this level?
What's ironic is that the reps that we took, myself, Junior Bridgman, the small forwards in the league, it pales in comparison
to what these guys take.
To what these guys do.
Because they got like 20 rebounders.
But 20 rebounds. But I mean, that's all they focus on is just spot shooting.
Jumpers.
And knocking down jumper. And if you're going to shoot 3-point shots, you may shoot in a given drill with Josh. You may shoot 100 3-point shots. You know, and from different spots and off the dribble and step backs and side steps and all the things they do. Another 100, mid-range, 50 or so mid-range jumpers each side. They really put in the specific spot shooting work that takes them to another level. So now it just boils down to, I think, that because you haven't had that confidence. I came into the league as a guy that didn't have a lot of confidence. I remember my first Laker game against Kermit Washington. He's backing off me, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, my buddy Kermit.
About 10 feet.
Coach told me I got to give this to you. thanks, big guy.
Coach told me I got to give this to you.
Let you have this shot. So that even messes with your mind even more. Like, oh, coach told him, okay,
I'm
going to prove coach wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not. Okay, I'm going to prove him wrong on this shot. I'm not. But so with Giannis, doing the same thing. They're backing off of him. Dare shots, they call them nowadays. I'm seeing it all kind of come together for him. And that's with Giannis, it's always kind of the mental aspect. And even the form is more compact.
Yeah.
The
elbow.
The wrist cock, the elbow tuck, the follow through, the rotation. Everything.
Yeah, his rotation has been impeccable.
It looks really, really good right now.
One more question from the fans, Em, and then we'll close out our fan engagement segment. Another Chris Middleton question. What sort of role is Middleton going to play defensively now, given his injuries and, you know, how that may have set him back over the years? How is he going to be different in Doc's scheme moving forward? And this is coming from Muse Nani on Twitter.
Well, and that's the beauty of Doc's scheme moving forward, is that it's not predicated on foot speed. And so Chris, with his lower extremity injuries that he's had to battle through, is not going to have to rely on, you know, sliding side to side, covering. You know, I did an informal kind of research deal probably 6-7 years ago, and there were three guys that had more distance miles covered defensively than any other three in the league. It was Chris, it was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and it was one other player. But all three had, like, hamstring injuries.
Jeez.
All three had hamstring or some type of lower extremity
all that
deal.
Running around, stopping
all that
and
running
going.
Around.
But stopping and going, too. You know, when you're chasing.
Going, taking hits.
Hits.
All that, knees to the thigh, all that eventually is going to catch up with you.
Facts.
So the fact that the Bucks right now are one of the bottom five teams in terms of average speed defensively and average miles covered defensively means that they're doing a great job of conserving their energy for the offensive end while still being an effective defensive team because of how they're playing schematically. So I think Chris Middleton plugs right in. You're not asking him to be this, you know, this one-on-one ISO stopper, but you're asking him to keep his man from going middle.
Yeah.
You know, kind of shepherd him into the help.
Yeah.
Kind of be physical on screens when you switch. Make sure the roller didn't have a clear path to the basket, bump off ball cuts. And so you're asking him to do something that is well within his wheelhouse, and I think he'll be just fine defensively.
Absolutely.
Well, all right. So that's our fan engagement. And this has been...
Some good questions today.
Yeah, no, this has been great questions.
And we need them all. We need that every day, every episode.
Keep us on our toes, because you guys ask some good questions that really thought-provoking questions, and that's what I like. I mean, because I love... You know, we could talk basketball all day and all night, and when we're together, that's mainly what we do. So... that's what's so beautiful about being at the Here District.
Yeah, and fans can submit questions via email.
Okay.
HereDistrict@Bucks.com or Bucks Plus Audio on Twitter, @OldSchool88 on Twitter, and I'm @PointForwardPro. Hit us up with your questions anytime, any place, and we're going to get with you on the next episode.
Listen, episode 2, I think it...
I think this might be technically our first episode. The first episode was like more of the welcome to the Here District.
Yeah,
so this one with E, Eric name,
yeah,
is officially, I think, our first episode. Yeah. Good job today, baby.
No.
Shoot.
Couldn't do it without you and MJ. Everybody makes it happen. So love you out there, fans. And, man, keep it coming. Here District, man, we're so excited about this Bucks team. And it's just going to be a fantastic voyage. And I am the captain of this vessel, Here District.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.